Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Welcome in, everybody, to the Longhorn Republic, your source for Texas Longhorn news, sports, and opinions with a bit of snark built in. We are a podcast at Burn Orange Nation, and you can find more great Texas Longhorn content over at burnorangenation.com. If you like what we do, please leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. Helps get the show out there. Share this with your friends wherever you found it, whether it was Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, anywhere where you find fine podcast content. You can find Kyle and myself. Connect with us on social media at Longhorn Pod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, The Longhorn Republic, or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. My name is Gerald Goodridge. I'm your host this week, like I am every week, and I'm joined by a man who has never felt more like a T-sip than all these country club championships, Kyle Carpenter. Kyle, how are you?
Pinky out, baby. You know, Texas just excels in the country club, and I don't think we should shy away from that. We win occasionally national championships in football and in the sweatier sports of basketball and such, but you really excel. You know, the tennis, golf, swimming, country club. I think rowing should qualify as a Ivy League country club sport. I don't know if your country club has a rowing team, but it should, because it feels very majestic. And we are, if nothing, a majestic school.
I mean, that's the crazy thing. There was a random tech account that was like, I can't believe Texas calls themselves a national power, but they're not on this list of people that made the three men's sports postseasons this year. And I'm like, well, Texas made two of the three, one. And also, Texas has won more national championships in the last 2 weeks than Tech has in its entirety of its existence, as far as the NCAA goes. Like, if you want to count meat judging, you've got us beat there, buddy.
No. I was going to say, Gerald, it's just the man trying to keep the meat judging down, because Tech is good at both judging and peeping. And they are world renowned. But, you know, the man doesn't want to count those. I guess we'll talk about it in our Thursday show, but I may have a couple notes for Tech fans to tune in this week.
You know, housing prices are out of control nowadays, but there are two places that it's always free to live, and that's In Your Lane and Out of My Business. Keep my name out your mouth. We're not here to talk about salty peeping. We're here to talk about Texas in the baseball tournament, and just kind of like, We usually would do a hold down the 40 with all this stuff, but there's a national championship roundup that we have to do this week. So we've got some individual and some team national championships to talk about. There is down the 40 because Texas is still in the running for more national championships, and not one, not two, not three, but four different fields of competition. We'll obviously close the show out with some bang the drum. Got some fun stuff to talk about this week. But we'll start with the baseball on the diamond. The Longhorns made a run in the Big 12 tournament, falling short in the title game. That's a 5 seed. Made it all the way to the final game. They lost to the Oklahoma Sooners 8-1. And I'm not going to say that Texas wasn't trying as hard. Let's just say it like this. But when you don't throw the ace out there in the championship game, it seems like you made a different decision. You made a long-term decision rather than a short-term decision. And you know what? Oh, you got the win, but Texas gets to stay at home, and the other team doesn't.
Yeah, I'll talk about that a little bit later in what's going on there. But I agree that this was a good weekend. All in all, I think they got exactly what they needed out of it. They have all of their goals still at play. Goal one was to host a regional. They're hosting a regional, so that's they are probably took the longest, most circuitous route to get here, but in the end, after, you know, finishing the season on a 5-0 win streak and then having a good run through the tournament, winning a couple over some, you know, really good postseason teams, right, including two over another host, right, over Oklahoma State, they got some good postseason baseball, a good taste for it. They got some different arms out there. Some excelled, some not so much. But they, you know, they ultimately tightened the belt, bucked up, and took down some tough teams. And I thought, you know, the starting with the 4-0 win, you saw what Pete can do against any team in the country, and you're going to see that in the postseason against Oklahoma State. You saw, again, in Gordon, both Pete and Gordon went over seven innings, over 100 pitches in the first two games, because those were kind of must wins. That's where you're really looking at your seeding. In Texas, with their starting pitchers, and both of those were absolutely electric, like Omaha type electric. So that looked good. And then we were kind of curious to see what the rest of the arms did all weekend. They had a loss in the first to Oklahoma State rubber match. They beat them 9-2 after that, and then ultimately found themselves against Oklahoma. And like Gerald said, didn't pitch the ace. Threw a lot of arms, five pitchers in that Oklahoma State win. In the notable item, of course, Gerald, in the loss to OU in the Big 12 tournament championship, was Texas got up early, 1-0. And that was on Ivan Melendez's home run.
That's the big news, or the perhaps the biggest news out of Sunday, because that game was not much to write home about. Texas kind of did the whole pitching by committee on Sunday to come away with that loss. But yeah, Ivan Melendez, 29th on the year. Honestly, with Texas hosting, I kind of wish that he hadn't just saved that one for this next weekend and broke it at home. But it's fine. Glad that he put it over the wall. And it feels like it's good to get that out of the way, right? You don't want that hanging over you as you go into the postseason. You want to just focus on stepping up to the plate and playing your best baseball. So, again, got a text from Kyle Russell because, you know, real recognize real, and Ivan Melendez is looking real familiar. I've got Sooners in my family. I was with some of them for this holiday weekend, and they were talking about how impressed they were with Ivan Melendez. They're like, dude can just rake, and that's absolutely the best way to describe the Titanic. So, like, and again, we talked about it going into the last week of the regular season. Texas had to go undefeated in that last week. Texas had to put up a good showing in the Big 12 tournament, and the fact that the regional hosts were decided before the Big 12 tournament title game was played, Texas probably still right. would have hosted a regional, because they ended up with the number 9 seed nationally. So they had a little bit of wiggle room and a little bit of room to fall after that win. So it seems like either way, Texas would have hosted a regional based upon the performance they put together. And really, the Big 12's weird decision to play the championship game that late on Sunday probably cost the conference a third host.
I feel equally as bad for OU not getting to host as I do for A&M not getting to participate in the NCAA basketball postseason tournament, the one that people watch. sorry, OU. You have to schedule tough. You have to play all season, right? I'll just say that, and I'll leave it at that. And then I may talk a little bit more about that as a preview in my Bang the Drum. But ultimately, they are the number 9 seed nationally, so there is that little bit of, like, what if could they have been hosting both the regional and super regional, assuming they are able to win. But I actually like the way that they have a tough regional. I like their super regional if they're able to get through better. It's an interesting, they're paired up with the Greenville regionals hosted by the 8 seed East Carolina, who East Carolina is very hot. They deserved it. I think they're on like double digit straight wins, so they deserve that one. Virginia, though, I wouldn't count out getting a win in that one. Coastal Carolina also has been good lately. Virginia was very good early. Coppin State is the 4th seed in there. So one of those will basically come out to play the winner of this regional. And in Texas's regional, right, it isn't easy by any stretch of the imagination. The number 2 seed is Louisiana Tech, who had a 42-19 record, finished the year number 33 in RPI. Dallas Baptist, who again was an RPI darling, right? That the fact that, you know, they're in tells you, because they didn't do particularly great in their conference. You know, they ended the season 34-22, not a particularly great record, but they had an incredible strength of schedule. They were at one point RPI number one in the beginning of the season. I mean, they were an RPI favorite, a metrics favorite. The computers really like Dallas Baptist, and again, they're number 23 right now, so not an easy matchup, not something to sleep on. And then almost feels like it's kind of a slap in the face. Air Force is the four seed in this tournament. Now, Air Force is 107 RPI. They have one quality win all year. But if you remember, folks, that quality win was Texas. So an interesting one. Not an easy by any means, but there were some really tough and kind of maybe even more loaded matchups for some other teams. So all in all, I think an okay draw, especially if you pair it with the Super Regional, which I think, you know, the eight teams in play for them. I feel pretty confident, match up pretty well with any of those seven across either of the two to ultimately get through Regional and then Super Regional. So about as good as you probably could have hoped for from where the team was, you know, let's call it 2 weeks ago, right? So ultimately, great finish to the home stretch as we head into big time baseball.
I know that Air Force game, like when you look at the, like from the surface, 14-2 is like an absolutely embarrassing win. But when you take into account that Texas pitched seven pitchers, you've got Eckert, you've got Harrison, LeBaron Johnson, Duplantier, Blair, Coy Cobb, and Zane Morehouse. Like those seven guys, I don't anticipate any of those guys seeing the field.
Morehouse is probably the one. Yeah. And I feel good if Zane's your guy. Maybe Coy comes in for a couple innings somewhere across these regional, super regional. We'll see.
I don't anticipate seeing any of them playing major innings for Texas in the postseason at all. But so yeah, like that's the thing. It's like that was in the middle of Texas still trying to figure out who its guy was and those midweek games before Lucas Gordon kind of put a stranglehold on that third starter spot. And so Texas, it seems like, has an opportunity to go on a bit of a run. And that Greenville Regional is pretty scary, salty at sometimes. I think East Carolina is a great team. I think Virginia is a great team. Coastal Carolina will creep up on you. But, you know, Texas has an opportunity again to go on a run and put themselves right back in Omaha. Like you said off the top, Kyle, the goals that Texas had for this season are still right there in front of them. And they are not the juggernaut that we thought they were going to be, you know, back in February or whatever. But as it stands right now, it's a new season. It's a whole new season. And if you get out of the regional, then you don't have to really worry about that third pitcher in the supers, which is nice. You can just win two and move on. So the goals that Texas has, again, are still ahead of them. And it took a winding path to get there, but they're there.
Well, and again, to go back to the tournament, you saw three Texas players were named to the tournament team. Melendez didn't get enough pitches to hit, I don't think, to make it, but Pete Hansen was one of those. And I think what you see is with the bats that Texas has, with the defense that Texas has, with the ability to go deep that Pete Hansen has shown, when Pete Hansen is pitching for the Texas Longhorns, they are as good as any team in college baseball, and that's Tennessee included, right? Pete Hansen has pitched for the Texas Longhorns to a victory over Tennessee. Like that, when your ace is throwing and your team is hitting, that is as good a team as any in the country, point blank, periods, full stop. So, you know, now it's just a matter of how many times do you get the right matchup with Gordon or Hansen out there, and you know, can you weather the other arms and weather the rest of the storm? It's an imperfect team, but incredibly high upside team. So sometimes those are the ones that are get hot and are more fun. And, you know, if the bats are working in Omaha, which is not an easy stadium to hit in, but if the bats are working, you know, and they get through regional, super regional, there's no reason that there is not a way. It's not the most heart appropriate, but there is not a way that this team does the things that they, you know, they wanted to. Again, a lot of things have to go their way. They have to get some things figured out. They have to be tight with whatever pitchers are. Defense has to bail them out. Like, they got to do some of those things. Have to limit the walks. There are things. But boy, we're in a much better spot to do all those things than we probably were just a few short weeks ago.
So Texas heads in this weekend, double elimination regional, opens it up with Air Force at 1 p.m. on Friday. They will then play either Louisiana Tech or Dallas Baptist on Saturday. They could, again, depending on how things shake out, any team could close it out in that final game on Sunday, but could extend into Monday. And we'll know more as we come to you next week. So let's jump into this national championship roundup. Kyle, Texas brought home some team and individual hardware, and we'll start with the wire-to-wire undisputed national championship. Texas Rowing won its second consecutive national title, the third national title for the school on the season, with a couple of more potentially pending following the men's indoor and women's tennis. Number one team all year, solidified it with a massive victory over Stanford. And again, when you talk about the Director's Cup, beating Stanford head-to-head in any of these things bodes well for the end-of-the-year tally. So we'll see how that shakes out.
And for the second straight year, head-to-head with Stanford was the deciding factor in rowing as well, right? For this has been very interesting. For the second year in a row, Texas has won a national championship. For the second year in a row, Texas and Stanford have tied for the top points at the national championship meet, and the deciding race has been the varsity eight, right? So Texas was coming into it, and it knew that it had to beat a couple different teams, but it at least had to finish one place ahead of Stanford. If they did that, they would win. And they did finish one place ahead of Stanford, but they finished 15 seconds ahead of Stanford. It was tense for about the first, I don't know, let's call it six paddles of the race, and they just pulled ahead and just never looked back. I mean, those are nice, right? You don't need to be worried if you're the coach or you're in the boat or you're watching as a fan out on the shore. They quickly made it clear that they were won that, and again, by default of the tiebreaker of winning the first varsity eight for the second year in a row, they won a national championship. So incredible congratulations to that team, to Coach O'Neill, who basically, you know, has we've talked about it before, but has just got this team immediately top eight when he gets here, and just shaves off numbers every year and has never gone down in his finishes. He had a top four finish, a top two finish, and now back-to-back top one finishes. So I don't know how you get better. I guess you'll just be one forever. But he has never gone down in his finishes since coming to the University of Texas, including back-to-back national titles.
I mean, he gets better by increasing that margin of victory at some point, right? Like, they're gonna have to check these ladies for PEDs, or like check the back of the boat for a motor at some point. It's getting that dominant. But Texas absolutely crushes in the rowing national championship. Again, third on the year with more in the hopper for Texas. On the individual side, we talked about the women's tennis national championship last week. And again, so apologies to that team for only getting a week's stay. Take that up with your friends on the rowing team. But Texas wasn't done on the courts. Texas won not one, but two national championships on the air quotes individual side, though. Can you call a doubles win? It's technically not a team championship, but it is two people playing for it. Anywho, Richard Ciamara and Cleve
Parker. A pair of individuals combined.
They got one smaller trophy, or two smaller trophies rather than one large one. Can we combine those and trade them up? No, anywho, Richard Ciamara and Cleve Harper won in dramatic fashion after battling back, dropped the first set 7-5, won the second 6-4, and then won a 7-point tiebreaker to get Texas its seventh men's doubles title in school history.
Yeah, just the second in modernity here. So very, very exciting on the men's side to get a championship. You knew that women's team was so good, and we'll talk about them in a minute. Obviously, they're the reigning champions, and you love seeing, because both the tournaments were happening in the same place at the same time, that the biggest cheerleaders for that women's team in the national championship game were the men's players who were there celebrating with them, cheering them on. You just love to see that camaraderie, but you love, I mean, as much, if not more, to see now you have winners on the men's side and see how they're able to take this into next season, the momentum that you get from this. But beat a really, really good pairing from Ohio State, Matej Vosel and Robert Cash. So, you know, incredible for Ricky. I think I have heard him called Dick Ciamara. And our boy Cleve, just always one of the most emotional guys on the team. Very excited for the Texas. Both has a pair of national championships, as well as a guy named Cleve Harper came to the University of Texas and gets to be a national championship. That is poetry.
I don't know if the name Cleve has ever been printed on a diploma from the University of Texas, but I'm excited for it to happen. Not to be outdone, sophomore phenom Peyton Stearns beats Connie Ma of Stanford, suck it trees, to win the women's singles national championship in a relatively dominating fashion. After being tied 3-3 in the opening set, rallied to win that one 6-3, and then cruised to a relatively easy win in the second set 6-2.
Yeah, I mean, Peyton Stearns was dominant all year. Reminder, this is the future right here, right? This was, you say, oh, wow, Stearns won it as a sophomore. Well, she played Connie Ma, who's a freshman. I mean, you just see, it's kind of like we've seen in golf, right? These 18-year-olds are no less ready than a 22-year-old to win it all. It's really incredible to see. Stearns has never not won a team national champion since she's been in college, which is wild. But now she gets to add the individual trophy. She's the first woman to win singles and teams since Nicole Gibbs in 2013. I think fifth woman in the past 22 years to get the clean sweep, the double-double, if you will, the team and individual championship. So just Peyton Stearns is just an unbelievable talent, someone you'll see playing professionally for a long time. I mean, we've reveled all year. I think this, her singles, if you count this tournament, is something like 30-2 on the year, or greater than that even. Just she's been so good all year, and in doubles, honestly, for Texas, and is enjoying the season of a lifetime.
Keep up the good work, Peyton.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
And that's the part of the show where we whip around all the rest of the fun stuff happening on campus, and we down the 40. It looked dicey early on for the softball team, but they figured out how to deal with feral hogs, and that's Haley Dolcini in the circle on Friday, and freshman phenom Sophia Simpson in the circle on Saturday to come away with a 2-1 win, beating Arkansas on its home diamond to advance out of the Super Regional and to the College World Series.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it was their first College World Series since 2013, first for Coach White since he's been here. Just exciting for this team to take that next step and to do it in the dramatic fashion that they did, right? It's they felt there was a chip on their shoulder because they thought they should have been hosting, and the kind of metrics and polls would have told you that that was the case. So they went to Washington with a chip on their shoulder and won in Washington. And they went to Arkansas with a chip on their shoulder and some admittedly rabid fans, right? We saw the football team get shaken by a rabid Arkansas. They're loyal fans, and they're also especially ginned up when Texas comes, showing all their teeth and showing off. They made it tough, but I think there was a stat when Texas won its first game of the postseason with a shutout that something like 48 out of their 63 all-time tournament wins had been shutouts, right? I think we talked about it last week's podcast. They typically win in the postseason with pitching. When they have elite pitching, think your Cat Osterman level, that's when they make runs. And so we said, all right, Haley Dolcini, no pressure, but you were brought in to be the ace. And good God, did she just, I mean, as a one-year Longhorn, she is going to make some memories and be a name that people talk about for years, because just so unbelievably gutsy. She threw 535 pitches in an 8-day span, basically had four scoreless in that game one, and then, you know, gave up three runs in the bottom of the fifth. You could have at your, you're already tired, you're already hurting, you're already at your end. When that happens, you could have, you know, not blamed her if she didn't want to go back out, but shit, they're dragging me off on Friday. And she did. She went out and threw an absolute gem, 7 innings, 5 hits, 1 earned run. Just, you know, really, really incredible gutsy performance to stave off elimination. And then enough cannot be said for the Saturday performance when freshman Sophia Simpson from Barbers Hill, who was a really touted high school state champion, elite, you know, amateur player, came in and pitched the game of her life with 7 innings, 5 hits, 7 Ks. Some great defense in that one. Janae Jefferson had a ESPN top 10 Sports Center catch. They had a play at the plate. I thought Mary Iacopo was great. I just thought ultimately this team battled their freaking tails off to get out of that packed house. There showed people in the houses surrounding the stadium on their roofs watching the game. I mean, it was an intense atmosphere, and for them to come out of that. And then, Gerald, if you like the idea of the underdog and the chip on their shoulder, and I think this Texas team really, really does, every other College World Series participant got hats and had an NCAA-supplied sign that was shaped like a ticket that said "punched your ticket," and they did not have one for Texas. Literally no cap. They did not have the hats made up, and I think based on the Texas players' social media reaction that they're feeling a big, giant-sized chip on their shoulder, which I think actually is scary for the rest of collegiate softball.
It feels like a win for Texas to have even more of a chip. Like, I didn't think the chip could grow after the regional kind of snub, and I think the chip is going to continue to grow, and I love it. And like you said, if you've got Haley Dulcini in the circle, you've got a chance. And now I feel like we can say the same thing about Sophia Simpson. Like, she... And I think the most impressive part about her performance on Saturday was the bottom of the seventh. Like, it was, she clearly was, the moment felt really big. You could tell for the first couple of at-bats, you got runners on the corners, one out. And then she just pitches enough, puts the balls in the right spots for the batters to, you know, put the balls in play for her infielders and gets the win. And you could tell she was feeling it. And like that to me, if you've got... Again, what, like, softball is a pitcher's game. If you've got one pitcher that's feeling it, like Haley Dulcini is clearly right now, you're great. If you got two, you can make a run. And I think Texas is in a position to do that. And it's a tough field. Texas has to play UCLA, who beat them early in the year. That was a tight one. That, again, one could probably come down to pitching. But when you make it to Oklahoma City, survive in advance, and that's all that matters. And when you've got two pitchers that are pitching like these two ladies are, you've got a shot.
And Texas has two players with a never-say-die attitude, right? Queen Mary Iacopo in her final year, and then a true, I think, Longhorn all-time Rushmore player in Janae Jefferson. Who
retire her number already.
I mean, legitimately, truly, but this will be her last chance to wear the Longhorn uniform. She's been drafted the Athletes Unlimited and will go on with the rest of her career in life. But, I mean, she's been a Longhorn forever and has been dominant. It'll be a four-time national or All-American. And you saw that she had the Sports Center top play catch where she went over her shoulder running back, diving, you know, in the sixth inning, and then opens up in the Horns half of that inning, doubling off the wall, and was the first run scored. They got that rally. Caitlin Washington and then Mary Iacopo both drove in runs that gave them the 3-0 lead. And so, you know, you saw that good pitching, good defense behind that pitching led to the offense that they needed. They were able to string it together. And Texas is a team that likes the momentum. They ride that momentum. And so you have people on this team who are just not going to give up, never say die. I don't care what the numbers next to the team's name say. You know, UCLA, whoever is the opponent, no one wants to see Texas right now.
Keeping it championship, the men's golf team finished the stroke play at number 4. In the NCAA tournament, thanks in part to the efforts of Parker Cootie, who finished tied for first but lost in the playoff holes. Texas was the only team under par on Monday. That was a tough course, and Texas finally found its rhythm on Monday and managed to make it into the top 8. Now they're in the match play tournament, and again, survive in advance.
Yeah, they were 7th coming into the final day, and they were quite a few strokes from the 9th place team. Like, it would have had to be a bad day. There was a very clear top 7, and then everybody else, even the 8th place teams, were kind of fighting for a spot well below where Texas was. But I did get a text from at least one, I think 3 different Longhorn fans who were saying, is there a chance we blow this? Should I even turn this on today? It's on the Golf Channel. Am I going to be mad? And I was like, it's Memorial Day. You choose how you spend your time, whether it's with family or not. But I think it's more likely that Texas moves up two spots than moves down. And I felt, you know, I undersold it because they went from seven all the way up three spots to number four. And I think, you know, it's good to have the momentum, right? The seven strokes better than the next team. Good to have that momentum in the last day heading into match play, where, you know, a Fields coach team is always dangerous in match play. They won the Big 12 match play earlier in the year. It looks like both Cooties, you know, Parker and Pearson looking great. Actually, both Cooties, Kohlhammer, and juniors Mason Noman, Travis Vick, all named to the Ping all region team. So I mean, it was really good to have this on the last day, and they will head in with some good momentum. Vanderbilt will as well, and Oklahoma State, North Carolina, there's some really good teams at the top, but Texas, you know, to have the low score on the last day, never a bad thing.
The Big 12 actually has three teams in the field of eight. Texas matches up with Oklahoma State in the match play championship in the 4-5 matchup, potentially setting up a semifinal matchup with Texas Tech, who just made the cut playing the 1-8 matchup. So Texas has an opportunity to beat not one but two Big 12 teams on its march, potentially through the match play championship and on to a national championship. Continuing their run at a national championship, the dual number one men and women's track team have a cumulative 25 qualifiers heading to the national championship. We've got both. Texas has four for four on the relay teams, the 4x1 and the 4x4 for both the men and the ladies qualified, on top of multiple individual qualifications for members of both of those relay teams and a couple of field events to boot.
Yeah, it looks like they have stacked fields in both, and that's what you want. It's a points game. Just get the most people, the most bodies to finish. Higher you finish, you don't have to win. You just got to finish, score those points. If you win, that's Lanyap. You know, some chance for a lot of these players, athletes, to become national champions as well as All-Americans. So a lot still on the bone for the indoor national champion and indoor runner-up for now the number one men, number one women, looking to get three out of the four titles if they can make it happen at the NCAA championship.
You said that these people don't have to win, they just have to place. But I'm going to be really honest with you. Texas put up like multiple program records in the qualifier, so it's likely that they're probably going to win and place. Which, again, the smaller the number next to your name at the end of the track meet individually, the smaller the number your team has next to its name at the end of the track meet. And Texas, again, has an opportunity to add a couple of national championships on. And the kind of final quick hitter news, it's move-in day for the class of 2022, both on the football and basketball court. So you've got the likes of Kelvin Banks, DJ Campbell, Brennan Thompson. The list goes on and on for the football players. Artario Morris on campus, finally. Praise Hallelujah, whoever you choose to praise. Kyle, of all the people moving in on campus, who are you most excited to see?
Like I said, Gerald, I mean, this is athletes all across the 40. This is the women's basketball team. This is athletes top and bottom. I mean, I remember moving in to San Jacinto, the feeling, the excitement. You know, I get where these kids are sitting at. I had social media teams also following me with my check-in. No, I did not.
It's a big deal.
I don't know. Absolutely. I mean, I there's like a very easy answer is the two bigs. Like, I want to see Campbell and Banks, and they both looked, you know, appropriately and delightfully large.
Too large. Managed their weight.
That's right. They didn't look overweight, but they looked like enormous big humans who could push people around in a couple months, which is good. You know, as they ducked and slouched to get through the double doors of their dormitory, you know, those are good things. But yeah, I mean, that seems like the very obvious answer, and I could go a little deeper because there's some really, really good players, and we talked about it in this class. But I think we are going to need one or both of them. I don't think it's a secret to come in and push people around in these coming summer practices and secure a spot. And you know, it's hard for a freshman lineman to do that, but show that nasty, but also, you know your position and know your assignments and know what you're supposed to do. And if they can come in and at least be 70% of what they will be at the finished product, maybe next year, maybe the year after, you know, as they have a little bit of coaching, a little bit of college weight on them, and they're a little bit more finished for the next level. You know, but time is not a luxury at that position. And so selfishly, I want to see the bigs, and there's a couple bigs, right? It's not just those two. There's multiple other linemen arriving, but those big five stars have a lot of expectation, and I think one of the freshmen will need to step up and take at least one of those line positions, and then I'll feel great about where we're at.
You heard it here first. Kyle likes it when you show the nasty. Now, Devin Campbell and Kelvin Banks will probably be starters before the season is out. Jamon Tapp on the defensive side. Mm. One, I think the Texas team needs more gold fronts. I think that's probably been a missing piece on the defense. It's just that swagger and attitude. I'm also excited Dylan Mitchell moved in today as well. Like,
he did.
Be excited. Dylan Mitchell, Ontario Morris, officially on campus. Hopefully they are a big boon for Chris Beard and his basketball hopes.
Dylan Mitchell is one of the coolest. Like, he was so great when we got him, and he just has had this impeccable offseason and camp run, and he actually looks taller and leaner as he was moving in. He might be 6'8 now. I don't know if he really stands up tall. He might be 6'9 now. I think he's 6'7 typically is what he was expected to come in at, and some folks were saying he looked even taller as he gets on campus. But I think Mitchell is a guy who's going to play a lot and instantly for the Longhorns, and Artero Morris, you know, just you have two incredible players right there, and we're just talking two sports. Again, there was potentially some, you know, some professional athletes across multiples of sports that moved in today into the 40 acres and started their career. They're 18-year-olds. There's a twinkle in their eye right now, and they, you know, have their whole career ahead of them. But we don't even know, and it's funny to think about the butterfly effect, but there may have been multiple professionals across all kinds of sports who moved in today and started their journey for the Longhorn Nation.
And now's the part of the show where we honor one of the best traditions in all of college athletics, Big Bertha, and we bang the drum, brought to you by Joe Ruiz. So, Kyle, what are you banging the drum on this week?
So I mentioned to Gerald that I hinted at it earlier when we were talking baseball, but you saw that there was Texas was fifth, right, in the regular season Big 12 standings, and the commentators throughout this tournament who maybe didn't cover Big 12 baseball all year long were a little bit surprised, and I think the one especially colorful commentator who, you know, tried out every acronym in the book, his you know, like a bonefish in a pumpkin aquarium was how he described someone carving him up. Ooh, slip sliding like a greased up terrier. I believe it was the very patient color commentator who had to hear all that who mentioned, you know, what if you're dropped on this planet and you've never watched college baseball and you say this is the fifth best team in the Big 12 when you watch UT, but clearly there were some very good teams, and a Kansas State team that, you know, made a run and almost played before they lost to OU one game before the Big 12 championship, and they were at one point considered the bottom of the barrel, right? And a TCU team that won, and an Oklahoma State team that, you know, has national aspirations, and a Texas Tech team who's beat people real bad, and UT. And right now, OU, as much as I don't want to give them credit, is likely, probably, the hottest team in the country. They are, that is who they are heading into the postseason, which I hate. But they're going to give someone an absolute fit to be their number two. TCU is going to be the number two for the A&M region, a Schloss Bowl, a rematch for Coach Schlossnagel, who left TCU to head to A&M. So I'm sure the fans will be thrilled with that, and it'd be very nice to him. But yeah, I mean, it came down to it. There was four real schools that had a shot, right? I think TCU, OU are on the outside looking in, as I mentioned. Oklahoma State and Texas are playing host. And ultimately, it comes down to the fact of you have to know how to play the game, and you have to know. Coach Pierce has really got a knack. Last year, when they were so good throughout the regular season, and it did not matter what happened in the Big 12 tournament, he didn't really seem like he needed to show up to the Big 12 tournament. He will use that tournament for as much, but what you saw is that this year it was important, and so they did make their run, and they are hosting. Ultimately, the goal is to host a regional, right? That is what the whole season is about. That's what the crazy, you know, stretch in the beginning of the season when they were gone for what seemed like 65 straight days, and they played all through spring break, and it was tough. Honestly, they had bad results. But you learn from that, you grow from that, and it honestly helps your RPI. But they played tough teams out of conference. Big 12 was a good team, a good conference this year, so that helped as well. You know, they play some neutral site games. All of those things matter ultimately in the RPI soup, right? At the end of the day, RPI is not the only factor, but it is one of the biggest factors. And so Texas and OU are hosting a regional, and OU is not. And OU fans are very, very mad, and they very likely might have been the last ones on the outside looking in. They very likely may have won at too late of an hour in the Big 12 championship to ultimately be hosting. But also, Gerald, Oklahoma is gonna Oklahoma. Mm. Like, at the end of the day, bless their hearts, Oklahoma is going to be the Sooners. And some of the anguish per Kendall Rogers, D1 Baseball's Kendall Rogers, is self-inflicted. OU, for some reason, labeled its neutral site series against Texas as a home series, once they moved it to Globe Life Field from the confines of Norman, Oklahoma. If they would have labeled them that a neutral site game, they probably would have, they probably cost themselves 4 to 5 spots in the RPI by a clerical error. So while it is sweet to chuckle and point at Oklahoma getting jobbed, they also jobbed themselves. And folks, let me tell you, that's even sweeter.
There's a lot to unpack there, Kyle. And I made the comment earlier, the Big 12 deserves to not have three teams hosting because they decided to play the championship game at a stupid time. But also, again, it's wild to me that the games don't really seem to matter as much because of the way that the RPI calculates some things. And like, you know, we talked a lot of crap about teams in maroon canceling midweek games to protect their RPI, but like, strategically, they probably made the right decision, but I don't necessarily think it's the way that the sport should go. And now I sound like an old saying that, but like, overweighting the RPI, I mean, it's just weird to me. But again, it benefited Texas, so I'm fine with it, but I don't think it's just fun to me that the NCAA continues to have weird and dumb and arbitrary ways that it adjudicates these things. So I'm banging the drum this week on something that's not remotely Texas related as it stands right now. But Nick Saban was tangentially back in the news this week. If you don't follow HBCU football, what's wrong with you? No. So the athletic director and head football coach at Tuskegee University in Alabama, Reginald Ruffin, which one, great name, but two, made the comments this week basically calling out Alabama for not playing in-state teams, and specifically saying that teams like Alabama, if you're going to play some buy games and some money games against lesser opponents, why not use that as an opportunity to inject money into some local programs that need the help? It went sideways on him really fast because Alabama fans sent death threats his way immediately following that, which again, Alabama fans are going to Alabama. But I don't necessarily know if he's like super far off base. Like, if you're going to play a team that you're going to pay $1 million, $1.5 million to come and get their brains kicked in, why not keep it in state? That's something that I really applauded the University of Texas for doing. You always see a team like UTSA or UTEP on the schedule, which UTSA may be a bear this next year. Didn't anticipate that when you scheduled it. But it always seems like there's an opportunity for you to do, and this sounds terrible, but inject some funds into some athletic programs that necessarily need it. You know, you've got local programs that Texas, I think, I would love to see some HBCUs on Texas's schedule. I think it would, you know, add some needed other perspectives to what Texas is doing. And who doesn't love an HBCU band? Now, granted, it's you don't want your you don't want the University of Texas band getting shown up by a smaller and less funded band, but that's the risk you take when you schedule some HBCUs. They're going to put on a show. But when push comes to shove, if it's going to be $1.5 million of state money, why not inject it into some other programs and some other universities that could really use it and put it to good use?
I can't disagree with you. I still remember where I was the first time I saw the Texas Southern Band. My brother was playing at Texas State at the time, and they played TSU. And it was halftime, and I always like to go either snack downstairs or head back out to the tailgate and grab some food at halftime. And I just remember someone grabbed my arm and said, nope, sit. And I watched the Texas Southern Band, and it was my first taste of HBCU halftime fare where the game actually kicks off. No, HBCU football is getting better by the day, but you'll never beat an HBCU band. But yeah, Gerald, I think you're spot on. I think keeping it local is not, it's not wrong. It makes sense. But yeah, you know, Nick Saban, as we know, is God, so you can't argue with college football God unless your name is Jimbo.
All I'm saying is that there's another little game that gets played at the Cotton Bowl during the state fair, Prairie View and Grambling. That one is always fun. If you don't want a deal, if you want the Cotton Bowl State Fair football experience, but don't want to or can't afford the tickets to the Texas OU game, that Prairie View Grambling game is always a good time. But that's all we've got for you this week. Kyle, where can the good folks find you on the internet?
You can follow me on Twitter at Kyle Carbon. You can also follow the Texas Pregamer at Texas Pregamer.
You can follow me on Twitter. I am at G.H. Goodrich. Follow the show on Twitter at Longhorn Pod. Facebook and Instagram, The Longhorn Republic. Shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. Thank you so much for tuning in again this week. And until next time, hook 'em.
Hook 'em. Texas is a spring sports school.